You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to episode number 41 of Living the Dream with Rory O'Malley. If you like the podcast, you know what to do. Subscribe, rate, review.
Audition, side job, swimming upstream. Believe it or not, you're living the dream.
Hello, dreamers. Rory O'Malley here. Welcome to Living the Dream. I'm your host. I am so happy that you have downloaded and listened to this podcast. Thank you so much for joining me on my journey, talking with my actor friends and people in the business, us crazy, weird folks. I have a wonderful guest today, Barrett Foa, who I've known for such a long time. He was on Broadway in Avenue Q and in Spelling Bee. And I got to see him in Avenue Q and also Spelling Bee. But in Spelling Bee, I was his understudy. I was his understudy as Leif Coney Bear. And I was also understudy to another gentleman named Josh Gad, my buddy from college. So we go way back. And it is so exciting to see the trajectory of his career and to get to hear how this all happened. I did not know the story. He is currently on NCIS LA, which he has been on for 9 seasons. I cannot believe it has been that long. That 9 seasons went by so fast. I feel like he just got this job the other day. But he has been killing it on that show, and I loved finding out how out of the blue that all came together. You're going to really enjoy this story. And also his candor about how difficult it is to do 9 seasons of a TV show. It's funny because, you know, I often talk about doing 8 shows a week and the grind of that. I think that he really found a similar challenge and probably a way to deal with it in a similar way that you do on Broadway, getting through doing 9 years of a TV show. It's a very different medium, very different set of skills, but clearly a similar challenge. And he's very candid about hitting a brick wall and how he worked through that and the things that he learned on that TV show. And he's a great guy. He's also wearing a lemur onesie. And yeah, there'll be more on that in the conversation. I'll let him explain that. Here is my talk with Mr. Barrett Foa.
I did bring a change of clothes.
That,
by the way.
Well, what do you need it for?
I clearly don't. But there was a moment where I was like, is that inappropriate? Will I be sweaty? Will it be too hot?
Right. So well, if it gets too hot, you just let me know, because we don't have fans on because of the sound.
I'm fine, but I'm loved.
This is a lemur.
Lemur onesie.
A lemur onesie.
I have a tail and ears.
Yeah.
And these cute little thumb holes.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Perfect. How convenient for your thumbs.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this on because you were at a...
I was not a rave.
Okay, well, what I called it a rave, and you're like acting like it was sacrilegious.
I just want to differentiate the fact I was at an early morning dance party with like good vibes. It's called Daybreaker, and they have them all over the country, and I think all over the world they're starting.
Okay.
And they've had it for 3 years in LA at least. and it's once a month, and it's just basically people getting together and dancing in the morning before work. It's like 5:30 to 6:30 is yoga, which is optional, and then 6:30 to 8:30 you're just dancing, and they serve coffee and little breakfast things and yogurt and juices. And
you just go and dance your heart out?
Yeah. And then there are these guys, like a horn section. It's like sax, trumpet, and trombone. And they're going through the audience, the crowd, and they're like harmonizing and syncopating with the DJ.
So there's a DJ. That's what
it's a DJ. And there's always like a theme. So one theme was like pink. And this theme was their third birthday. So it was birthdays and onesies. So everyone's wearing onesies, and it's literally just like, it's a sober party. You know, they don't serve alcohol.
Right.
And I don't think anyone was on drugs because it's 6:30 in the morning. And
sure.
I guess that's a way to start your day, but it's not the way I want
to
start my day.
They're all professionals in onesies.
Exactly. Who are going to change and go to work. Right. But it's like, instead of going to the gym, why not dance your heart out with all these fun, awesome people with like positive vibes and just get high off your own freaking adrenaline.
Right.
It's such a fun way to start your day.
I really
highly recommend it.
I think it sounds amazing. I'm only nervous about waking up that early and getting somewhere. That's really hard for me.
You can do it. I believe in you.
You've never seen me try to wake up.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, it's not pretty.
Okay.
It's not pretty. Getting me in a onesie at like 5:30 in the morning would be a real
You're in the right business then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
Wait, you had to do that when you were on the television show?
No.
To get up?
No, that was like 9 to 5.
What?
Oh, it was 9 to 5. Oh, you're doing a single camera TV show
an hour drama. Were you hour drama?
No. No, with Kelsey Grammer and Martin Lawrence? No, it was a half hour multicam.
That's right.
So we were like at an office.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it was fantastic. We were out, like Kelsey Grammer every day was like, let's get out of here by 5 o'clock. I was like, okay, boss.
Wow.
I loved that.
That's great.
Yeah, it was really, it was pretty easy.
Yeah.
It was fun. But I know you are on NCIS LA.
Yes. You got all the letters right.
I did.
In the right order.
I did. I didn't have to practice. Maybe a little. Because I always say like Law and Order, SVU, or you know, any kind of time those letters, I have messed them up in the past. But I know your show. And you have, this is what I didn't know. This is the 9th season.
Yeah.
Barrett, how is that possible?
We just started. We're shooting it right now. The 200th episode.
And you've been with it from the beginning.
From the very beginning. All 200 episodes.
Don't understand how that happened, because I feel like you just got this and it's been like, I thought 4, maybe 5 years.
Yeah.
I could not believe when I heard that it's been 9 seasons. When Melissa from your show came backstage say hi. And she was like, yeah, we're on our 9th season. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
How
does that feel?
Well, it's kind of unreal, but it becomes real when we have these marker points.
Like 200.
When we had 200 and there was like a huge cake that they made with all of our little characters.
Cakes make it real.
Cakes really do make everything real.
They really put everything in perspective.
When you see a cake with the big 200 and your little characters are all there and the heads of CBS come and make speeches and you get a really fancy watch in your dressing, in your, you know, in your trailer.
And give you a watch?
A watch.
Right.
You know, just think where you're just like, they're like, thank you so much. I'm like, oh, thank you.
Right.
but people are making speeches and LL Cool J and Chris O'Donnell are making speeches and you just kind of look around the room and there's a ton of press and just like, oh yeah. Because we're on a show that is very popular.
Yeah.
Has a lot of viewers. But the viewers are not in the demo. They're not in the target demo that like advertisers want. So they're not young in a certain, you know, age range. They're a little older.
They're
sometimes our grandparents. Yeah. A lot of like, when I was home for Thanksgiving, my aunt had, my grandma had the show on and they love you and they're obsessed with you and what's going to happen with you and Nell and all this, like all these questions.
Right.
But it's not a hot show. It's not a, you know, Netflix. It's a broadcast television show.
Which, like, makes it very unique. That it's like a broadcast hit, you know?
Yes. Like, I mean, we are the 33rd longest running television show in all of television history, which, if you think about all the television shows that have ever been, it's like...
That's crazy.
It's like... It's just like we're up there with Bonanza and ER, and you're like, what is that? So that feels good and reminds you these moments that we had, this like huge press moment that we had last week, really makes it real and kind of brings it home, and you kind of realize where you are, right? Because you just kind of start showing up for work and it's that family. I mean, 9 years, it's like, that's like high school and college plus, you know?
Yeah.
So you're with these people a lot. And we do kind of form this family, and it's sometimes great and it's sometimes not, but like for the most part, we don't have a lot of we don't have any divas. We don't have any of that like crap.
You have a lot of people who are grateful for
these
9 years.
They're grateful, and they're just like, we're here to work.
Right.
And it's like Kelsey Grammer a little bit, like, let's go.
Real life.
Like
yeah.
We all have families.
Right.
I don't have family, but, but I am single. I'm single. I'm going to get real close to the mic and say that I'm single.
We've underlined that now. Okay, good.
People want to get in and get out. It's not about like vanity or things. So we're really lucky in that way. And people are like, you guys are a really easy cast to work with. And we have worked with a lot of casts and do work with a lot of casts. And they are not as easy to work with. So that feels good. It's those moments that mark the occasion that you realize kind of where you are.
Right.
Like, oh yeah, pinch me. This is fantastic. Because it becomes kind of normal.
Yeah. But I mean, it's you had done other TV and film things, but nothing that would close to 9 seasons.
A handful of guest stars. I mean, if that, like, you know, 4 guest stars, 5 guest stars.
It's just to go from, you know, being in the theater world and all that you have accomplished there to 9 seasons of a TV show. I'm still like wrapping my head around the fact that it's 9. I really can't. Because I feel like I just found out that you were doing it. Do you know what I'm saying?
I mean, I'm still wrapping my head around it too.
It must be like we're aging too, because time goes by so quickly. But 200 episodes is a huge accomplishment. It's really amazing. It's a lot of work. Because the way that a single, like a lot of people probably don't know, including like I didn't know until the last few years when I started doing single camera TV shows, how much time it takes to set up every shot. And it's so much waiting. It's, you're there all day long.
Huge, really long days.
Yeah. As opposed to multi-cam, which is more like something on a set, on a stage, and you have a few cameras watching the action.
Sometimes, I don't think you had a live studio audience, but there are sometimes with live studio audience. So it really does feel like you're doing a play in front of an audience.
Right.
You get that feedback.
Yes.
And we do not. It is very much in a vacuum. It's so weird that it's even still called acting, because it just feels like a completely different kind of acting.
Yeah.
You're doing things out of order. You're like, what just came before this? What's happening after this?
Yeah.
You're not creating an arc. You're just like doing the scene, and the arc is created by the editors or the director or the lighting, or there's so much stuff that's going on without you. And you just kind of say the words and go forward.
Right. You kind of are just like another set piece
in a little bit,
this picture that they're painting and editing together.
Yeah. And you are not, you're not kind of crafting that arc for your character. I mean, you have to think about that, but, and where you are like in the grand scheme of like the episode.
Yeah.
But it's so different.
When you're telling a story in front of a group of people, and you start at the beginning and you take them on that journey, you go on the journey with them. It's very communal, and it's
they're on the journey, you're on the journey, and you're feeding off each other. That live audience thing, there's just really nothing like it. And it's weird to be in a vacuum and out of order. And I'm still not used to it. It's not my favorite type of acting.
Yeah.
And that's why I try to, you know, go back to the theater as much as I can. And, there's free time that I have, and I almost wish that I have had used it, or will like use it to my advantage more.
Mm-hmm.
We can get into that though.
I have free time.
Yeah. Let's What do you do?
You'd have to come to the theater. I did. I started a podcast. Okay, that's basically what I did. But I'm saying, like, I know that feeling because when you're given a job and it's this great job, but you also have a lot of downtime while I'm backstage and everyone asks me, what do you do? And then you just get more and more anxious about,
what should I be doing?
I should be doing something to change the world. I should be, you know, and it puts a lot of pressure on you. You're like, no one cared when I was unemployed what I was doing and I had all the time. No one asked me.
Right.
But now that I have a job and it has like some free time attached to it, people are constantly asking me that. But
I want to get into that.
Yeah. No, we can right now. I mean,
is that what we're talking about right now?
Yeah, sure. We have no rules on living the dream.
I feel like we should we like back up a little
bit? Don't you worry. We are going to get to the beginning. But I sometimes like to start where you are now.
Yeah.
So people know, you know, because they know, especially because we have a lot of theater listeners.
Yes.
And so I want them to know that you're on this amazing hit TV show for 9 seasons. Okay, I'm going to talk more about the 9 seasons. Okay. Since you wanted to go to the beginning, I'm going to take even more time here.
Sure.
9 seasons. People always say, like, how do you deal with 8 shows a week? Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's a very specific challenge. So do you
making
see,
it fresh every
making
day
it fresh every time? Right. Yeah, you never repeat an episode. But I'm sure you repeat sets. You repeat looking into the computer to find the information and to get the, you know, like you're in the same scenarios and situations. Do you pull on your theater experience, like taking from those challenges and how to stay present and grounded? Hmm. Or is it just like a completely different challenge?
I think it's a different challenge for me because it really is just about like, what's the line,
right?
Because there's nothing that's in your muscle memory or in your mouth, you know, in that way that 8 shows a week where you're like, oh my god, what's the next line, and then you breathe and it just comes out,
yeah,
because your body knows it,
right?
But there's not time for that soaking up of the words of and so it's more about instinct and just like kind of shoving the words in your brain and then getting them out.
Right.
And
not thinking too much.
Because when you do start thinking too much, then you do start acting a little bit.
Right.
And shaping it.
Yeah.
And it's not really your job.
Right.
It is like more about the editing that does. It's like you kind of have to get out of its way and deliver it.
Yeah.
And I am a deliverer of information a lot, but also I have like quirky, funny scenes with the girl and, you know, low status scenes with, you know, Ella Cool J and Chris O'Donnell or frickin' Linda Hunt, who like has an Oscar and came from theater too.
Yeah. And Kindergarten Cop.
And Kindergarten Cop, I mean, please.
You know.
So she like, but she, I mean, Linda has trouble with her lines and she'll be the first one to tell you that. And and it doesn't matter because yes, time is money and we want to get the shot and we want to go home, but you just need to get it once.
Hmm.
And Linda is so amazing that she needs to kind of put the words in her mouth and she needs to kind of rumble them around a little bit. And then she'll try it a million times and she'll stumble and bumble. And then you just get that one take and you're just like, fuck, Linda Hunt.
Right.
You are such a good actor. And she's a total audience favorite and she's so good at what she does. But like, if you saw what's on the cutting room floor, you would be like, she's not good at what she does because she can't do, but that doesn't matter.
Right.
Because it's worth the waiting around because it's just so fantastic.
It's part
when you get
of
it.
Her process.
Ella Cool J had, I mean, let's talk about some dark days. Uh-huh. So I had like a lot of troubles in my head for many seasons.
Okay.
I was insecure. I was not feeling supportive. I wasn't supported. I was not feeling creatively fulfilled. And that I was like kind of self-sabotaging. I would like know my lines at home and drill them and drill them and drill them. And then I'd turn into like Cindy Brady on set, and like I'd see the red light and like I couldn't get out. Right. I'd just be like intimidated, and once I would trip over a word, then I would start spiraling because I was like, I'm gonna get fired, someone's gonna make fun of me, I'm not
right.
Instead of just like, well, everyone trips over the words, yeah, and they just start their line over, and it's right. fine. And Chris O'Donnell, I remember he was like, everyone trips over words, but like you trip over a word and then you, I can just see you spiral. You just go down of like this berating yourself of like, right. I'm never going to get it. And then that's just a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
So I was very insecure, and we should probably talk about meditation, which helped with that and some other things. But I remember LL Cool J saying to me once when I was having some trouble, he was like, in theater, you have the soil and you have your seeds and you have the sun and you have the water, and then you have all of rehearsal, and then you can blossom into your little rose garden, and you have the time to cultivate that.
LL Cool J said this.
LL Cool J said this.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Yes.
So this podcast is turning into something else. I need to know all about LL Cool J.
Sure.
Todd.
Okay.
I was going to ask you that. I was like, do you call him LL?
Yeah. Todd on set.
Okay, great.
Todd Smith.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Ladies love Cool James Todd Smith.
Amazing.
It's the full Ladies Love Cool James.
Got it.
But he goes by Todd. James Todd Smith. Okay. So he was saying this garden metaphor and theater, and I'm like, yes, that's what I'm used to. I want to be in a rehearsal room and I want to foster it and cultivate it. And how do we get from here to there? And why does it feel real? And let's connect. And he's like, that none of that matters. What we need to do is we need to take the flowers from the flower shop, cut off their stems, stick them in the dirt, and take a picture of that. And you still have a garden. Mm-hmm. The audience doesn't know or care how it came to be.
Right.
It's just there.
Right.
It's just frozen for time. So you just have to get it once. And then 1 second later, all the flowers, all the roses can just fall down.
Dead.
Dead, fall down. They weren't in the dirt low enough.
But you got the picture.
You just got that picture. It's all you need.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I don't know, sometimes I just think about that. I told him that he told me that in season, three or whatever. And
yeah,
he was like, what? I don't know. He's full of all these little like metaphors and a lot of wisdom.
He's seen a lot. He's been around a long time.
He sure is. He's full of a lot of quotes.
I bet.
He likes to say things like teamwork makes the dream work. The other day, the 200th episode, he was like, I know it's cheesy, but ego is not your amigo.
He's That's kind a of good one.
Things like, a lot of things like that. But they're not right. bad. They're right.
Cat posters are right.
It's a little cat postery, but I freaking love that guy.
Yeah, he sounds amazing. But that is such a great metaphor for... Yeah. TV and for theater.
And theater. But it's just like, get out of your way. You just have to get it once. You just don't overthink it. Don't need to just
And also,
get it.
You, if you are so worried about getting it perfect, you're going to miss what Linda Hunt finds, which is the great performance in the mistakes, her way there.
Because
that's all part of her process.
Yes, because every time it's different.
Yeah.
It's so weird that I'm like, I didn't even realize that there were that many ways to say this line.
Right.
But you're just figuring it out and how you want to say it. And then finally it just makes sense and it pops in her brain and on the screen and the audience just falls in love.
Do you feel like part of it is she has an Oscar and so, she feels, or everyone gives her the time to do that? Because I feel when I'm, especially when you're a guest star on something and you come onto a set that's not your home, I just am like, my job is to stay out of everyone's way and make sure that their day is not made any harder because I'm here.
Yes.
So do you feel like when you're there, you're like, I don't want to.
Well, this is part of the problem also is how I started. I started backing up to the audition. I auditioned for the role of Nate Getz, who was this psychologist on the show. Right. And it was between me and another guy, and the other guy got it. Uh-huh. So we both tested, and the other guy got it.
Right.
And then they called me 2 weeks later to say, we know that the network went with this other guy, but we kind of want you to, we want you to be in the show, and we're going to basically write a role for you. Wow. And at first it's going to be like tech operator, and then we're going to give him a name, and we're going to give you a little scenelet. And right. I guess I tested well in those pilots. We were on NCIS as like a backdoor spinoff. Is that what they call it? A backdoor pilot.
Okay.
So we were on NCIS. It tested well, and they brought me in, and I was a guest star for the first 12 episodes of NCIS LA.
Right.
So I was like, and you know, the showrunner said to me, just keep your head down, keep what you're doing, keep on doing what you're doing, keep your head down, and we're going to probably make you a series regular by episode 13 or at the end of the season.
Wow.
Great. So by episode 13, I became a series regular. And by the end of that season, they had painted that other Nate character kind of into a corner, and they didn't know what to do with him.
Hmm.
And he's an amazing actor, and he comes back once or twice a season because we right. love him so much and we love the character so much. But it just like didn't work in the puzzle of what the show was becoming. Right. And we needed like the tech guy, and I was the tech guy. And right. my character became more and more important. But I kind of came in super low status of like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm a theater guy. I'm a musical theater guy.
Right.
Here are these kind of alpha, not kind of, super alpha male people who are LL Cool J and Chris O'Donnell. And
Chris O'Donnell's alpha male?
Well,
I kind of love that.
Rory's eyes just gave a little twinkle.
Okay, so maybe I gave away, like, I really love Chris O'Donnell. Keep going. Keep going.
Chris O'Donnell's great. Yeah.
An Irish
circle of friends.
God.
School ties, Batman, Robin. Come on.
Yeah. I love him.
Yes. So, and he's a total pro, but like the two of them are like very big masculine energies.
Sure.
And then you have, and then you're on, I'm on a CBS show. I'm right. on a crime procedural drama.
Right.
I'm on a shoot 'em up, like, you know, Naval Criminal Investigative Service. Like what? Like the most kind of red statey.
This
like,
is very far from Avenue Q.
It's a very long way from Avenue Q and a very long way from the Putnam County Spelling Bee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which we have to get to.
Yes. We're going to start all over. Don't worry. I just okay. wanted to get all this in first.
There's going
to
be a lot of it.
Okay.
So, what are we, how are we doing with time? I'm just going to babble. We're going to do a Mary Lou Henner and just
great.
Go way over.
Many part series.
Great. I love it. So, where was I? So I just felt I was very...
like fish out of water.
I was fish out of water, but in a way, I kind of embraced the nerd of him because he was a tech geek. So I kept playing low status.
Right.
Which I realized in the scheme of the show, I'm like, you have all these alpha males and these big dogs. I was like, there has to be like a funny, weird underdog.
Yeah.
Because if everyone's just alpha, then like, you know, where's who's the beta? Where's the dynamic?
Yeah.
So, and it worked because then like the boys could kind of like make fun of me a little bit, but then I could be like smarter than them and then they could be tougher than I could and I would back
something
down.
To play
and,
with.
Yeah. And it was, I think somehow I understood that. And then they started playing to those strengths and understood that what I was. And then they started making me more of a nerd. And then I, you know, like this nerdy girl and I like Renaissance fairs and weird, you know, dorky things.
The glasses, the rims got thicker and
the rims got the like Coke bottle by the end.
Yeah.
By season 10, I'm just like blind. So I kind of fit in, but unfortunately I took that on, like Barrett took that on.
Hmm.
And so I started getting intimidated and I was like, am I going to be fired? And are people not liking me? And I was just in my head and I would spiral. And then we can get to some meditation stuff or we can get to me kind of releasing some of that like nonsense that was not
because
useful.
That wasn't like in the first week. You're talking like a couple seasons into
it. Then seasons in. Yeah,
and that's certainly. That. I think that would be very surprising for people because they think once you're somewhere a couple seasons into something, or if you've done a show on Broadway for a couple of years, or that your confidence is just always there. But it's constantly challenged. It's constantly being something that you aren't sure you're going to have access to because you have new challenges all the time, I'm sure. Do you think that there was something specific that happened, or you were just letting your character kind of take over?
No, I don't think it was my character taking over me. I think it was just the dynamic on set. I think it was our original showrunner he hired me and he kept me around, but he was not on set. Mm. He was not interested in talking to me or really anyone at all ever.
Right.
So I would like try to make a meeting with him and he would be like, I don't want to talk to you.
Right.
And I would talk to my other friends on other shows who were like, oh yeah, I had this great idea for my character. So I went into the writer's room and I told them this, or I wanted to have more stuff on my set so that I could interact with it. And so I started just bringing in little props from my home. And then they were like, oh, that's cool because now it feels like your desk.
Yeah.
And you can interact with props, and that's good for helpful for characters, especially when you're giving a lot of kind of mundane information.
Yeah.
It's fun to show behavior. And the desks that we had were, there was no pencils, there was no paper. We were just computers.
Right.
And so I was like, I'm just literally tip tapping on this keyboard.
Right.
And there was no behavior and there was nothing to play with. And I was like, everyone's like, shh, no.
Right.
There was just no collaboration. And I'm from theater and we're in a rehearsal room being like, what if I do this? Or how about we try this? Or let me just try it and see if you like it.
Right.
The director and you and the stage manager, whatever, you're all in a room collaborating and that's what rehearsal is for.
Right.
But there is no rehearsal.
Right.
You just do it. It's like, we'll read the words once.
Yeah.
We'll maybe block it. I mean, sometimes they block it with second team, meaning our stand-ins.
Yeah. Oh, that happened with me actually a lot.
Yeah. So they're like, so you're just going to start on set, see those marks. You're just going to stand there and then just say your lines. Here we go. And action. And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
What's this scene about? We haven't even.
Yeah.
And it's just go, go, go.
Yeah.
So again, no seeds, no
right.
sun, no water.
Just
no
taking
water.
That picture of
just
the
take
flowers,
that picture.
The
so
we bought at the store.
We'll get it eventually.
Yeah.
So that freaked me out.
Yeah.
It just freaked me out. And I felt not collaborative. I felt not challenged. I was just like, what? Why am I here?
Right.
And I just got in my head about it.
Yeah.
And that was scary and yucky.
Yeah.
And was not coming from a creative place.
Meditation helped you come out of that?
Yeah. I had some friends, Hunter Bell.
Yeah.
Our friend, he was one of the writers of Title of Show, the Broadway musical, among many other things. And he and I were super good friends, and he said something about meditation, and I was like, yeah, I don't have an extra 40 minutes in my day to devote to that. So I don't know what you're talking about. And how much money is it?
Right.
And you can find meditation classes for free and you can do it for 5 minutes if you want. Mm-hmm. But this kind of meditation is, it's called Vedic meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 20 minutes twice a day. And it costs some money to get the class.
Uh-huh.
Here's the deal. I was like, that costs a lot of money, Hunter. Hunter's like, it is the best money I have ever spent on anything in my entire life.
Wow.
And at the time, Hunter didn't have a ton of money to throw around like that. And I was like, wow, if he's saying that,
mm-hmm.
And I'm getting a pretty nice paycheck from CBS. Maybe I can afford to just see what this is about.
Isn't it funny how sometimes we don't want to spend the money that's like the thing on us that would be the most helpful, even when we have access to it. Or, you know, I always find myself being so nervous to spend money and acting like the actor who didn't have any income whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Because I'm scared. I'm scared to, but when it's something that's going to like give your mental health or health in general, do
I
it.
I mean, invest, you're takes. Investing in yourself.
Yeah.
And here's the other deal. When you actually do invest in it, you have skin in the game in a way that going to that free Buddhist temple and trying to, getting that, downloading that app and like trying to stick with it.
Right.
You're just not going to do it the same way. Cause you're like, oh, frick, like I paid a lot of money. Let me at least stick to this for the first few weeks.
It's a commitment.
And then it becomes a habit. And then you become addicted to it because it feels so fantastic. You're basically like, it's basically the concept of, okay, I'll be happy when, right? Well, I'll be happy when this show gives me creativity. I'll be happy when I get more dollars in my bank account, when I get married, when I have this baby, when I get this car, when I buy this house. And of course, the amount of followers that you are getting is never going to be the best number, and you're going to want more. And it's that chase, right?
Right.
So the idea is, wait, well, if we meditate, then we can find and practice finding this bliss in yourself
being
now. And you have like these transcendental trips. I mean, a Vedic meditation is an offshoot of transcendental meditation, which is more quote unquote popular. And the person I learned from is named Emily Fletcher, who is used to be a Broadway actor or dancer.
Yeah.
And she's been in many things, and she was freaking out. She was in A Chorus Line on Broadway, and she was freaking out and in her head, and kind of sounds similar to what I was doing at NCIS LA. Right. And she had a dressing roommate who was calm as could be. And she was like, how are you so calm? And she's like, oh, I meditate. And Emily learned and then is now killing it. And I'm going to plug her, but because she's a friend, but also because she changed my life with this, her company. It's called Ziva Meditation, Ziva. If you go to zivameditation.com, you'll learn about it. And if it's for you, it's for you. And if it's not, it's not. But it's like you find this, you access and kind of practice this kind of bliss within yourself. And it's so weird how it happens, but basically you're just saying a word to yourself silently for 20 minutes.
Right.
And your mind wanders, then it comes back, and it wanders, it comes back. And for some reason, that tricks your brain kind of into this weird fourth state of transcendent, of existence. So it's like not waking, it's not sleeping, it's not dreaming. It's like another thing.
Yeah.
And your mind, you can get to this place where you're like, oh my God, my body is like filled with bliss, with like these bliss chemicals.
Oh.
And because of that, and because practicing that and accessing that, then I'm getting kind of woo-woo about it, but in your real life, you start remembering that.
Right.
Like you can access it
without going into it for 20 minutes. It's like closer to you.
Right. Or your body just remembers that. You don't even have to be like, hold on.
Let me
this is
get
a difficult
some of that
situation.
Bliss
let me
juice.
Yeah, let me just juice myself or sit in this corner.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, you've been practicing that all along twice a day, and you get it's like do you remember that commercial like you got peanut butter in my chocolate, you got chocolate in my peanut butter.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a Reese's thing. And it's like that. It's like, "Oh wait, you have life in my meditation. Oh wait, you have meditation in my life." And you're like, they kind of like start overlapping.
Sure.
And it's fascinating how you're like, oh, I'm just a so much calmer person. And I don't care as much. And which is a weird thing to say.
Yeah, you don't obsess over or have anxiety over things that you don't need to.
Yeah. And so auditioning becomes just, you're so much more relaxed.
Yeah.
You know, being on set, I found, dealing with people, stressful situations, you're just like, oh yeah, it's not about this happiness that I'm going to find later. It's just kind of, oh yeah, it's always within. It's this constant reminder of like, that's actually just within you. P.S. It's just, oh, I got to access that and practice it, but it's worth it. I mean, it's just changed my life.
Wow.
I've been doing it for 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, almost six, actually. Actually, 6 years.
It's amazing. I'm going to look that up. I've definitely done the apps. You know, I do it whenever I can. I'm bad at meditation. I know how powerful it is. And like everyone who does it and is committed to it has really, really positive effects from it. But it's just hard for me to sit still.
So the secret is that it's not about that because it's hard for everyone to sit still.
Yeah.
And people are like, but I can't stop my brain from wandering or my mind from thinking a thought. And you're like, well, guess what? That's like telling your heart to stop beating.
Right.
So that's actually not the point of meditation. And there's like this, there's someone going around being like, close your eyes and stop thinking.
Yeah. Which is impossible.
Which is impossible.
You have to train yourself to.
It's basic. No, you're good.
Move that, your thoughts.
You just train yourself. You basically just like say this nonsense word that they give you.
Yeah.
And you pay a lot of money for.
Yeah.
And it's like gobbledygop. And then you just keep
saying. That could be the word?
I mean, basically, it's like usually a one syllable something or other. Oh. But it doesn't mean anything. It's not like a secret Sanskrit something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you just say something and then you wander off for 15 minutes and then you realize that you're off and then you come back.
Right.
And for some reason, or you go away for 1 second and you come back.
Right.
Or you go for 3 minutes and you go, and then you're just, but it's just this back and forth and that's all okay. It's just, as soon as you find that you're off, then you just come back.
You're
not like, I did it bad.
Right. Don't judge yourself.
We don't practice meditation to get good at meditation. We practice meditation to get good at life. So you're not like, I'm the best meditator.
Right.
You're like, I had a kind of really thought-filled meditation today.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then you're like, I had a really transcendental meditation today. Okay.
Right.
You know, and I remember my ex being like, hey, how was your meditation? And I was like, it was fine. And there was never like, because you can't attach to one or the other because they're both good.
Right.
Anyway.
You're not like getting out there like, I saw white rabbits. Right. It was amazing.
I mean, sometimes you do, but I'm like, that's no better than like a one where you're just like, I've been thinking about that thing that's bothering me the whole time.
What's really amazing is having this conversation with you in a lemur onesie. You're literally like, you have a tale right now.
I
you're
totally
telling
have a
me
tale
about your bliss ears. Chemicals that
but
you're
But here's the
activating.
Deal. I mean, like, it's weird because, okay, yeah. So now I live in LA and I have all this free time and I'm going to like dance parties at 6:30 in the morning and I'm wearing a lemur onesie.
Yes.
And I just went to Burning Man for the second time. Oh. And I meditate. And there are some spiritual things that I was like, I would roll my eyes at all this shit.
Right.
Before.
In
New York. I'm a New Yorker. I'm jaded. I don't need that. And you're like, you know what? I'm freaking 40.
Yeah.
I just turned 40 last week.
Last week?
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
That's fantastic.
Wait, aren't you around now?
Wait, what? What do you mean?
When's your birthday?
Oh, no. December.
December.
December 23rd.
Oh, right. Because it was around Christmas. Yeah. That's what you're telling Mary Lou Henner.
Yes.
It's like, what am I doing? Like, I got to shore my shit up.
Yeah.
Like, time's going. Like, what am I? Let's just try to make it as awesome and fulfilling as possible.
Right.
So I just need to, I think I just need to do some, you know, some dig down deep. Because it was, I think, 4 or 9 years on this show. It's been amazing, but it's like, it's gotten me coasting.
Sure.
Because I don't have to think about where the next paycheck is coming from because it's so steady. Because I have a lot of free time and can cultivate friendships and travel a lot.
Right.
There was a year, like my mom was super sick and I was going back and forth to New York.
Yeah.
And I could because I realized that I had 4 days off of work.
Right.
And I got on a plane the next morning and I didn't have to think about, wow, that's kind of expensive.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I'm going to see my ailing mother.
Yeah.
I want to be there for her and help the family out because I'm in LA and I feel disconnected from that. And like, I can afford it because I have the CBS money. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I get, then you get, disconnected from, well, where do I live? Am I living in LA?
Right.
am I living in New York? It affords you so much, but like you kind of get off what am I doing? What do I want to be doing?
Right. It puts you on a track and you're like, wait, did I choose all of these things or are they just happening to me?
It's true. And sometimes people are like, well, you won the lottery. Mm-hmm. And you're like, or I'm like, I don't even know if I wanted that ticket.
Or you're like, I didn't you're like, know oh if my I God, bought that ticket.
Did I buy that ticket? I think I bought that ticket.
Yeah.
And it is, I mean, it's weird to think like I did an audition and two callbacks and then I, and then my life changed forever. And a decade of my life is my entire 30s was here and in LA and on this show and not in theater, which is where my love and passion lie.
Right.
But people are like, but you have so much stability now and you can do other things. I'm like, okay, but I'm 40. Mm-hmm. And what are those roles going to be? And is that different? And are people going to remember me? And there, it's weird, especially being on this show, which is not a popular show. Casting directors don't know, like no one in this town knows me. Mm-hmm. No one in, like, I'm like, does anyone in New York kind of remember me? I don't know.
Of course they do.
Sure. But, and which is very nice. But I was a replacement at Avenue Q and I was a replacement at Spelling Bee. Sure. But like, I was kind of onto something in New York and then I got this, which is fantastic. But like no one in LA knows me because I went on like 3 auditions.
Right.
And then got the show, which is like everyone's dream.
Right.
I didn't have to pound the pavement.
Right. And it is successful. It's just what you're saying, like that demo of people. And a lot of people like in New York and LA, they're watching the Netflix and everything.
And the Game
the
of
Netflix.
Thrones.
I'm a grandma. That Netflix. I don't have that. Yeah, and Game of Thrones and you know, certain shows. But, like, certainly, I think this is so interesting because people would never, ever imagine that these thoughts are going through your head. Never.
And they, I mean...
I understand. I know that they are. Like, every actor knows. But if people on the outside don't realize that these are the things that you would think about.
I mean, as... And then also, let me be very clear that I am so grateful for this job and for... the financial freedom and for the popularity. But at the same time, these things haunt me.
Yeah.
I mean, like, haunt me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what have I been doing with my life? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Right. What I really want to be doing?
Right.
And I struggle with that every day.
Yeah.
And I know it's not like what I'm supposed to be saying. And as an actor, it's like, shut up and get your paycheck. And you don't have to think about anything. And you're so lucky. And I am. Yeah. I'm so grateful, but there's other things out there. And that's the stuff that I'm like, well, meditation, well, Burning Man, well, let's explore and like push some boundaries and find some life in me.
Right.
Because on the playa at Burning Man, you're dehydrated and it's hard and it's hard. It's really difficult and also fun.
Yeah.
But life is going to come and like, shove itself in your face,
right?
In the good ways and in like the bad ways of like, wait, I can't escape to my car, phone, air conditioning, food that, you know, like you're like, I'm out of my comfort zone and I cannot go to my little gadgets and run away.
Right.
And sometimes you can connect with people and that's so fantastic. And you're partying and you're dancing in the middle of Nevada, but it's also hot and crazy. And you're like, I haven't pooped in 4 days. And you know, like there's a lot. And I'm like, yes, put me into that.
Yeah.
I need that challenge. I need that life, like hitting me from the good ways and the bad ways because I'm in a little bit of a pattern now. And I don't know if I'd say a rut, but, you know, I've 200 episodes.
Yeah.
Of it's basically the same episode every day, even though it's different.
Yes.
Different writers.
Of course. You're in the same director, the same computer.
Same computer, same people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same glasses.
It's fascinating. Same
glasses. Well, no, they're getting bigger.
They're getting bigger. Coke bottle here.
Yes. Well, I mean, you talked about being in LA, that you're from New York, and that was kind of a transition. You are one of the rare people who was born in New York City. I always have every time, like when Gerald and I were in New York and we were like, are we going to have kids? I was like, well, Barrett was born in New York City. You know, there aren't too many references.
He doesn't seem too crazy.
He's on his 20th season of that show NCIS LA. Maybe our child will end up in LA on a CBS procedural. No, but I mean, you have such an interesting story. You went to a really great school. What's the name of the school that in Dalton. You're like, which amazing school are you referring to, Rory? Dalton. I meant Dalton. We'll get to University of Michigan. Please. You're like not the first University of Michigan person to gush about their school.
I'm sure we.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of school pride.
Please. But Dalton is where you went to in New York. And did you start doing theater there? Is that?
I did. I started doing theater there and I wasn't very good and didn't know my lines. But people afterwards were like, here are some roses. And oh my God, you were so good. And there was applause. And I was like, this is fantastic. So I was going to sports, like CPOA sports camp for 4 years. And like my face was melting off because I hated it so much. And all boys, 8 week sleepaway.
Yeah.
Horrible. And then my parents wised up and they're like, okay, arts camp.
Yeah.
So I went for a year to French Woods Festival of the Performing Arts.
My goodness.
It's basically Stage Door Manor's little rival.
Oh.
I played Sky Masterson and, you know, I was in eighth grade and then eventually went to Interlochen.
Right.
For 4 summers. Wow. This is my 4 high school summers. Mm-hmm. And that's where I like got that, like, oh, the arts are a thing. Mm-hmm. And you have to put work in and passion, right. And people are obsessed and there are cast albums and they're listening, right. and that's just musical theater. Then you are meeting opera people and fine art pottery people and violinists and oboists, and they're locking themselves in their practice rooms and practicing that credenza for, you know, hours and hours, right. And I'm like, oh, I kind of just memorized a monologue and like said it. You know? And you're like, oh, maybe I should work on this. Right. Maybe I should craft this a little bit.
Right.
So eventually, and also Interlochen, it's in upstate Michigan. It's so beautiful. But that's kind of when I started hearing about all the BFA schools and do I want to go into musical theater? And I applied to some academic-y schools, but also I applied to University of Michigan and went there. You went to Carnegie Mellon, right?
Yeah.
I applied to Carnegie Mellon I auditioned there and I remember being like, thanks for letting me in, but I do not want to be in this school because it was so, I did not have a good time visiting there. The town was weird and I would talk to the people and they're like, well, it's not fun, but we're learning a lot. And I was like, you're not selling this. It was weird. It was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was a weird time when I came in because they had just built the Purnell Center, which is the completely new drama building.
Okay.
So before I was visiting the old facilities and knew that the next year they were going to be going into this new building. And not that the building was going to make it more fun, but like they were spread out between 3 very old buildings.
It was old.
It was a little disjointed but it was really charming in a way because it was like, you know, all these amazing actors had gone there and, sure. You know, you were like, oh, this is how
the pedigree was. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it went to this place that was brand spanking new and very, you know, sterile, I guess you could say. So it took a while, like the 4 years to kind of like,
break it in,
put holes in the walls. Uh-huh, and like, you know, people used to get upset, like not teachers, but like, you know, administrators, like we have to keep this place pristine. And it was like, no, we don't. No. We need to like break it in, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, Pittsburgh is actually a college town because there's so many colleges there. But I wouldn't say like if you were looking for a school spirit, football games.
I think because coming from the city,
right.
I wanted to have like a Big Ten kind of Greek system.
Yeah.
Like, not that I went to any football games. I went to one quarter of one football game. I know it's complete blasphemy. And you know, the one Greek party I went to, I was kicked out of.
Uh-huh.
which would never happen today, but I was a friend of whatever. But what I'm saying is, like, I just wanted that college-y university experience with ivy on the walls. And anyway, so I chose University of Michigan, and I loved Ann Arbor, and I loved my time there, and I learned so much and made lifelong friends. And after graduating, Rachel Hoffman, who's a casting director, she was in my class, and she went immediately basically into casting directing. And she cast me and Shoshana Bean and Chad Kimball and Kapathia Jenkins and Eliseo Roman and Tally Sessions and Leslie Kritzer and all these people who are working on Broadway now in A Cast of Godspell off Broadway. And that was... Stephen Schwartz was involved with the casting.
Right.
He rewrote lyrics for the prologue for our production.
Wow.
And it was just one of those like crazy special off-Broadway things. It was off, and then we moved off, and we were going to like have this whole life, but then like financial stuff fell apart. And
as it does.
But it was enough to get us a recording. I played Jesus, and you know, it's the first time Shoshana's on anything. Shoshana Bean's like riffing up a storm on Bless the Lord. Go listen to that right now.
Oh yeah, no, I think I have it on my phone.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
And we were all babies. We all had just graduated CCM, Boston Conservatory, University of Michigan, whatever. And it put our names on the map.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, I was in the original cast of Mamma Mia. I was a swing in that, and I left 4 months after we opened to be in this musical called Kept, which was written by Henry Krieger, who wrote Dreamgirls and Sideshow, and Bill Russell, who wrote Sideshow, and Stephen Chbosky, who wrote the young adult novel, The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, like, we were all obsessed with. Hmm. And I'm like, wait, you're writing the book to this musical? And the musical was basically the La Traviata, Camille, Moulin Rouge story, but in Studio 54.
Oh.
So in, like, 1980, disco, it was, and, like, instead of consumption, she gets what is... HIV AIDS. Mm-hmm. And I played an actual character, and I was like the character guy. And I was like, okay, well, I don't want to be Mamma Mia is great, but I'm in the ensemble. I was living with my parents. Cause remember I was from New York City. So after University of Michigan, I just moved back home.
Amazing.
So I got to save money there.
Amazing.
And then, and I was like, I have the Broadway credit. I don't want to be in this ensemble forever. This is fun, but I have an opportunity to play a lead role with an amazing pedigree. Andy Blankenbuehler was the choreographer, and Scott Schwartz was the director. And it was super, super fun, but it lasted 6 weeks.
Right.
You know, and maybe it'll go on, but it didn't.
Right.
Not at all. I thought it was the best thing ever. And then the reviews came out, and I was like, oh, okay. It's not. But I was like, this is the kind of career I want to architect. I don't want to be in an ensemble, but it's fun to have my first Broadway show. Now let's keep going from there. And then I started getting like, I did a Shakespeare play at Hartford Stage and the Shakespeare Theater in DC. It was a co-production, and it was, I played Claudio in Much Ado, and Karen Ziemba was Beatrice.
Wow.
And we were both like, okay, wait. So you're in musical theater, I'm in musical theater, but all these other guys are like in Juilliard, like Juilliard, Yale grad school, NYU grad school, super fancy actor schmactors. And we were like, have you ever done Shakespeare before? And she's like, no. And I was, she's like, have you? And I was like, in college a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm a Mamma Mia chorus boy, so I don't know what I'm doing here. But Mark Lemos directed it, and he took a chance on me.
Yeah.
And the two of us were like, wait, like a fish to water.
Mm-hmm.
Duck to water? Whatever. We were like, this, we get it because we get the cadences. We get the musicality of it. We can, and that's why musical theater people are, you know, are really great with Shakespeare. But that was super fun. But it was those kind of things where I'm like, oh my God, I'm stretching myself. I'm growing.
Right.
I'm playing leading roles. Wait, I thought I was kind of going to be this kind of chorus boy. And here I am, you know, when you get to the city, you have goals and you're like, I want to be a working actor.
Yeah.
And then once you start working, you're like, well,
what kind of working actor?
Yeah, exactly. I can be a little more specific now.
So you, was that around the same time that Avenue Q was playing, or was it like, was it already off Broadway when you got
there?
So it
was off Broadway. I didn't see it there, but I had worked with Jeff Witte, who wrote the book.
Yeah.
And he later won a Tony. He, as an actor in like a workshop at Playwrights Horizons, and he played a squirrel, and Matt Bomer was in it, and he played a dog, and
amazing,
exactly. And we had fun, but what I'm saying is they were papering the house. Avenue Q was opening on Broadway, and Jeff Witte asked me, you know, to send out an email like, hey, who wants free tickets? Papering the house means free tickets. Mm-hmm. Who wants to be in the audience for this thing? Because we just opened and we need people in the seats. I'll go. I heard that was cool off Broadway. All right, so let me go. Yeah. I sit down. I think I was alone, just a single ticket. And the first line of the show is Brian saying, oh, I just got laid off from my catering job. And I leaned forward in my seat and I was like, my friend just said that to me yesterday.
Hmm.
And then I leaned back in my seat and I was like, this is a show about me.
Hmm.
This is a show about my friends.
Right.
Like, oh my God, my generation. Like, this is what we're going through now. Like, after college, living in New York City, like some real life shit.
Hmm.
And then I just laughed and laughed. I see John Tartaglia bounding across the stage with all these puppets on his arm. I was like, that is such an amazing role. I will never play that role. I didn't even like, I'll never play that because I can't puppeteer. What is that? I don't know what he's doing.
It's another skill that makes it look like,
it's
unreal. He brings a puppet to life.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
So then I was doing some off-Broadway things and this and that. And then my agent calls me a few months later. And it's like, hey, would you like to audition for Avenue Q? And then I open my mouth to say, well, what do you mean? I don't. And they're like, they know.
Right.
They are kind of starting anew. They need to, not starting anew, they need to find actors and teach them puppeteering because they've exhausted the puppeteer community in New York, which is, you know, 20 people strong.
Right. Like, it's working on Sesame Street.
And they're all on Sesame Street.
You know, like they have other things to do. They needed to make
that
a training.
Pay better. Also.
Yeah.
But also Avenue Q, you have to look a certain way. You need to do the comedy. You need to be able to dance. There's the drama. Like there's a lot that has to go on.
Sure.
And puppeteers are sometimes puppeteers for a reason.
Right.
Like they like to hide behind walls.
Sure.
And some don't, but like, you know, they're not necessarily performers all the time.
Right.
So, they were like, we got to get some performers in here and maybe teach them puppeteering. Let's see if that can happen. So I was in the first ever puppet camp.
Wow.
So it was Rick Lyon who created all the puppets and created the role of Nicky Trekkie. And it was me and another guy in a room with these puppets. And he was just giving us some 101. And we spent 2 days and it was kind of for our last, final callback for producers.
Wow. So you were there with other actors.
One other.
That's
worse. This was for the understudy.
Right.
Of John Tartaglia.
Right.
I got it.
Uh-huh.
And then I had 2 weeks to learn the part, which never leaves the stage. And it plays two parts. You're playing Princeton and Rod. So like the leading man, Ingenue, and this character role, this crazy voice. And the art of puppetry.
Yeah.
In 2 weeks because John was going on vacation for a week.
Wait, so you learned it in 2 weeks and then you went on?
Yeah, for a week. So it was like, here's the role, but also here's another thing you have to do, which is like learn the art of puppetry on your arm.
Yeah.
And being in that theater was a little challenging because I was like, hey, I was the guinea pig.
Right.
If this worked out, then they could have more understudies and replacements. And this is a show that could last. P.S. Yeah. It's still running.
Yeah.
But, and so some of these people who were in on Sesame Street for 15 years, and this was their livelihood and their skill, they were like, who is this guy who just put a puppet on his arm for the first time 2 weeks ago and is now playing the lead? Like, what? Like, it was crazy. So it was a little bit of a strange environment to come into.
Sure.
But I eventually ingratiated myself, and I went on a lot that year. I went on 60 times.
Wow.
And, well, John took his vacations, and he was also, like, the it boy.
Yeah.
Because he was nominated for a Tony, and he was hosting everything, and he was just, he said yes to everything, which he should have, and it was good. But sometimes by the end of the week then, he was a little cashed.
Sure.
So I would start to, like, go on Sundays
right.
a lot.
Which is the best way to train to be where you were
so I'm
at
watching,
the end of his year.
Yeah. So I'm watching him like a hawk because he's just the best at what he does.
Yeah.
I'm also having all these understudy rehearsals with Peter Linz, who is on Sesame Street and a professional, amazing puppeteer. And he was my dressing roommate at Avenue Q. He was teaching me everything I needed to know. And I became a decent puppeteer.
Yeah.
And they asked me to, instead of, you know, replacing John with a star or a known name, they moved me up. And I knew two roles. So, like, I was a value. I also did Nikki and Trekkie 4 times.
Right.
Woo! Which was not, well, it's not my, not totally my wheelhouse. I can't do that. That Trekkie voice.
Really yeah, difficult. It's hard. You feel like you're just burning your cords off.
Basically.
When doing something like that.
Yeah. Anyways.
But I saw you.
You did? Know,
yes, I did. I saw, the only time I saw Avenue Q on Broadway was with you. And you had replaced John Tartaglia.
Yeah.
And you were wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
You were amazing. I was living in LA, I think.
Oh,
at
wow.
the time. What year was it? 2000 and...
2004 or 5, 6?
Yeah. Yeah, I was living here.
Yeah, so fantastic. I went on and that was great. And then from there, basically, I think they... So I was like, I had a 9-month contract, another 9-month contract. And they were like, do you want to re-up? And I was like, I'm going to audition for this thing called Spelling Bee because they need to, because they're replacing Jesse Tyler Ferguson,
right.
who's leaving to go do a show in LA.
Right.
And
whatever happened to him?
I don't know. Jesse who? And then I got Coney Bear, and I had seen the show a million times because Celia,
right.
Keenan Bolger, was one of my best friends from college. And Todd Buonapane, who understudied Coney Bear and Magic Foot.
Yes.
Same, Barfay.
Barfay.
I went on to see him when he understudied. And so I'd seen it a lot. And I remember being like, I'm done. I don't need to see Spelling Bee anymore. I'm good. And then they were like, do you want to audition for Spelling Bee? I'm like, oh, I kind of do like that role. It would be really fun to be with my friends, Todd and Celia, who I went to University of Michigan with. And I got it, and I got to play with Celia, and Todd understudied me, and then, wait, how did you come in?
Because Todd took a leave of absence for 4 months to do a play downtown.
Rush?
Yes, the dog.
That's right. Yeah.
He played a dog.
Yes.
And I had just moved to New York. I saw Spelling Bee in previews. That's when I got called up Josh, and I was like, oh my God, this guy, Dan Fogler, is going to win a Tony and you're the only person in the world who can replace him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He didn't give me a dime for commission. And wow. And so then he went into the show, and then I was here in LA and I was like, I've got to move to New York. Moved to New York, got a job in a financial firm as an assistant in a human resources department. Well, because then a month into it, I got Spelling Bee, but it was only for those 4 months that Todd was going to be gone. So I kept the job.
I was going
to the financial firm during the day and then coming to the theater at night. Because I knew, like, it was going to end. I knew that it wasn't going to be forever. And I had this great day job.
Yeah.
So I kept it.
Of course.
Yeah. And that's how we met each other. And I went on as Coney Bear for you.
Right.
Like, I remember not a ton, but I remember there was like this week in January where you were gone. I don't think it was a full week, but I got to have like my entire family come.
Oh, nice.
Because you gave me a little bit of a heads up. I think it was like personal days. It wasn't like you were calling out sick, but like, you know, they don't tell you things and you were like,
right.
So you know.
Just so you know.
This weekend in January, you're on.
I don't know what that was. I can't remember. Brother's wedding?
Maybe.
Anyway.
It was something like that. It was like a full 5-show weekend.
Right.
Yeah, and that was a great environment to be in. And it was like, it feels like everyone was so young. I look back at that. I'm like, my God, we were children taking over a Broadway show. And that's what, like, now being in Hamilton, I'm the old man and they're all children, which I say on this podcast all the time, but it's true. Yep. Like, they are all so, so young, but that's what we were.
Well, meanwhile, then we were all replaced.
Yo, yeah. By even
younger people.
Yeah.
Literally, like, yes, younger, like, yeah, people
right
who were,
school.
Who I didn't even know, who went to University of Michigan, but I didn't even know them.
Yeah.
I didn't even overlap with them. So we were, yeah, we were like the old farts by then. But,
had you started going out to LA at all at that point?
No. After Spelling Bee, I did a production of,
Pirates.
How do you remember that?
I saw it at Paper Mill Playhouse. I see a lot of theater, Barrett.
Yeah, Pirates!
Yeah.
!
Yeah.
Which was this like updated version of Pirates of Penzance,
yeah.
And Nell Benjamin rewrote the lyrics, and it was, I thought, so funny, and it was bopping around for a while. It was at the Goodspeed and Paper Mill and Huntington.
Oh, it was fantastic!
I thought it should have. It was fun, but it definitely, and it also coincided with this like pirate moment.
Happening in
the world, Pirates of the Caribbean, like the second,
I forgot
third
we had a
one,
pirate moment.
We really did. It was very, and like every, you go into any like kid store or bookstore, and it was like pirates, pirate this, pirate sticker book, pirate pop up book, pirate, 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 pirate.
Right.
And so it was. I was like, we got to ride this. This is now. This is happening now. And then it just kind of it fizzled. But shortly after that, then I did a play at Playwrights Horizons, an Adam Bach play called The Drunken City.
Oh.
And it was a six person play. And it was just, I had so much fun doing it. We were all drunk the whole time and the city tilted and it was actually like the set tilted and we would go back and forth.
Oh, wow.
It was just so that weird Adam Bach craziness. I don't know if you guys, if any of you saw A Life. Did you get to see A Life?
No.
With David Hyde Pierce?
No.
I can't stop thinking about that play. It was one of the best things I've ever seen. It was the weirdest, craziest play. Anyway, Adam Bach has an incredible mind, and I got to be a part of his mind and his language. But I was like, hey, I'm doing theater. I'm like, how many of my contemporaries are going from like plays to musicals and musicals to plays? And
right.
And that kind of gave me some confidence in like my acting, and I had moved back and in with my parents.
Uh-huh.
I was 30, and I was supposed to be there for like a season for the fall,
right?
And then I was gonna like buy a place because I was like, I'm gonna be here. I should invest in some real estate,
right?
And it was just the bubble was right about to burst. Yeah. And I would like find a place and my parents would be like, you're paying this much money for this postage stamp.
Yeah.
And they're like, I think you should wait. And then so I did. And then a season became another season, became a year and a half. And I was living at home and I'm 30 and I'm single and I don't have furniture. And I was like, Barrett, you have to not, you have to like live your life.
Right.
And so I was like, what if I just move out to LA just for a season, for a few months?
Right. We don't have seasons in LA.
We don't have seasons. I don't have seasons.
That's why you've been here 9 years,
exactly.
Waiting for the season to end.
I've just been waiting for winter to happen. No? Isn't there a leaf that needs to turn?
No.
I'm just watching it very closely. Nothing's happening. 9 years.
So you came out here just kind of like, I need a change.
Just a change, just to see. And, I had my agent had an office out here, and by office I mean one guy behind a desk and a phone. And he was like, I guess I'm working with you. I don't know you, but I was like, I guess I'm working with you. I don't know you, but, and we hit it off and he sent me out all the time and I got auditions and generals and was being charming and getting really close to things. And that was like September, October, November. And then in January, I was like, I'm going to move. Actually, after the holidays, I was like, I'm going to move to LA and just see what that's like.
Yeah.
And I got a, used Honda Civic, which I still maintain is my favorite car. I started booking things, guest stars.
Yeah.
And then but that fall, I was like, you know, people were like, so where do you see yourself? And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, you know, like an NBC show or an ABC show or a sitcom or a single camera. And right. I was like, what are you talking about? Huh. I literally had, but I moved to LA not knowing anything about television.
Right.
And here's me from University of Michigan with all this training, and I'm giving master classes to musical theater students being like, you can't come in to a rent audition singing Sound of Music.
Right.
You know, like you have to know what you're going in for and what the styles are and what right. the equivalent is. And if you're going to sing Rodgers and Hammerstein, we'll sing Rodgers and Hart maybe. Or, right. you know, like these basic 101 things. And here I am in LA, not taking my own advice with a completely different medium.
Right.
I'm like,
are you telling me you were singing Rodgers and Hammerstein going into sitcom auditions?
Is that not a good thing?
I think that might have been a problem, but I'm amazed you were booking. You were still getting them. Maybe I'll go in there with a Rodgers and Hart song.
That's a good, it's a good technique.
Good.
So I just DVR'd the shit out of everything. I literally was like, I'm going to watch one show. I'm going to watch every show.
Right.
Because at that time you kind of could, because there wasn't like Netflix and a million things.
Right.
So I was like, here are all the ABC shows. And I just DVR'd one of each.
Right.
And even if I didn't watch it all the way through, I was like, okay, this is what this show looks like. This is what CSI is. This is what, you know, Pushing Daisies looks like.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, that's what they mean by an ABC show. This is more of a CBS show. Like, I understood what those categories meant.
Wow, you really didn't watch TV.
No, I didn't. I feel like people didn't do that then. Or maybe I just didn't.
Maybe that's a New York thing.
I think it was a New York thing. I was just obsessed with theater. I would see theater all the time.
Well, you had it. Like, I grew up in Cleveland. We didn't get to walk down the street and go to a Broadway show.
Sure, but when you were here... when you were in New York, you were watching television a lot?
Yes. Yes, but not as much.
Right.
But I think that it's kind of like you grow up doing something, you don't move somewhere and just completely stop. I definitely watched a lot less TV living in New York, but when you're growing up in Ohio and you love acting,
right.
Where are you going to go other than movies and your TV?
So my parents were not TV people.
Right.
We did not have VHS tapes. We did not. It's like, well, if you've already seen a movie, why would you ever see it again? Because there's so many other movies to see out there.
Right.
Which was a total Manhattan, New York philosophy kind of thing. Well, we've been to that restaurant already. Well, why would you want to go to it again? And I'm like, well, I liked it. I want to go back. No. There's a million more to try. You have to keep going new.
Yeah.
It was like this kind of faux philosophy and maybe like a New York City thing.
Yeah.
So here I am being like, well, what are these television shows? And I finally kind of figured it out. And I could answer the question of like, well, I see myself more here and there, here on a sitcom or a single camera comedy. I mean, definitely I thought I was going to be in a comedy, if anything, but I hadn't even thought about it. I didn't go to LA knowing if I even want to be a comedy or a drama or a half hour or a hour.
How long was it from that January to when you were in NCIS?
Like 3 months.
That's crazy.
It's insane.
Crazy town.
And in between, it was like
everyone in LA who just heard that just threw up.
Just threw their shoe at their iPod.
Because you show up to LA and there are so many shows, there's so many casting people. It's so hard to meet anyone, it's so hard to get auditions. So for you to be able to get into an audition for what was going to be a big show because it was in that NCIS thing.
Yeah, that franchise.
Like it was
first,
already
the first spinoff of this franchise. Yeah.
Wow. So they knew like this is going to be something for you to even get into that room as somebody who just showed up to LA.
With not a power agent by any means.
Right.
I mean, again, a guy behind a desk. I wasn't like, I'm with WME. I'm like really set up.
Right. Can I ask you, are you still with that person or?
I'm not.
Okay.
He moved to a different agency and then I moved with him, but I didn't like the vibe over there.
Uh-huh.
And also I realized I'm working 10 months out of the year.
Yeah.
And well, the annoying thing was that I had to keep paying the first agent, the agency.
Sure.
that got me that job and not the guy
who left.
And yeah. But the one who got me and did all the work and the one that was like kind of my friend. And so I kind of lost his like friendship, which was sad. And like, you know, my guy.
Yeah.
When he moved and I moved with them, but I was like, I don't need an agent. And there were, I had a lot of people telling me, you don't need an agent because you're on this show right now.
You and when you're on a show, you're also contractually obligated to keep yourself available for that show. So going out and auditioning and looking for work isn't really an option. If there's something that could be fit into those 2 months that are off.
Right.
Okay.
Sometimes you can like do a guest star on another show while you're filming, but the one I'm contractually obligated, as you said, to NCIS LA, and they're in first position always. So no one else wants to hire me to be a random guest star on their show if I'm in second. So, cause if I'm shooting the same day as NCIS is shooting, they're SOL because NCIS always takes precedent.
Right.
They own me.
Yeah.
That's why I'm a series regular. That's why they pay me a lot. So, they're not going to, it's inconvenient for them, even though technically in my contract, I can do other guest stars.
Right.
And it's that weird thing where you're like, I'm not a name enough to be like, oh, we got Barrett Foa on this. You know, it's like, oh, he's that guy who's the tech nerd on that one show. But you
know, everyone watches though.
That everyone watches. I mean, tell me about it.
It's not everyone, but I mean, like, it's one of the top rated shows.
But also CBS doesn't really want to share you. Also, sure. I mean, they technically are contractually obligated to, but they can also be like, no, or that, or that's on the same night, or it conflicts with this way, or we can't figure it out schedule wise. Right. It's just like a little difficult, even though there are ways around it. And again, in the hiatus, it can happen, but it's a little difficult to fit something in, and you know, in this like tiny little.
And you also want to like just.
You want to chill out
just when you're not under lock and key and in a work environment. You want to be able to just be free.
Yes. Now I have done that. And then also I get itchy and I do theater.
Sure.
So I did, I played Harold Hill in The Music Man.
Oh yeah.
Up in Connecticut.
That's right.
Connecticut Rep. And I had so much fun.
Yeah.
I had one of my best friends from college play Marion. We just had a blast.
You did Byron Seller.
I did Byron
Seller. I saw you in that. You were wonderful.
Thank you.
I've seen you do a lot of plays. Didn't you also, this is like back after college, didn't you do Bye Bye Birdie?
Yeah.
I saw you do it.
In Cleveland.
In Cleveland. Yeah. Because who else was in it? Celia. My friend Beth Crosby. There were some other people.
Aaron Lazar
was in it?
Justin Brill.
Justin
Bohan.
Right.
Enrico Rodriguez.
Wow.
Tony Yazbek.
Really?
Uh-huh. Because we did West Side Story and Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh.
I think he might have been only in West Side Story. But Rue McClanahan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I know. Yeah.
Played the mom that. And that was, so we did it in Cleveland and Pittsburgh, Soledad Opera, and it was like a co-production. And I almost missed my senior showcase for it.
Wow.
But it was so fun to do. Wow.
You had a golden girl on stage with you.
Yeah. And we like, during the last number, she would slow dance with the, chorus boys.
Oh, really?
The Rosie, whatever.
Yeah.
She would, while the last song was going on, she would, and in her fur coat, because that character always wears that fur coat. I was like, I just slow danced with Rue McClanahan. Pretty cool.
That's amazing.
Oh, gosh. Wow. Memories.
Memories.
And I just saw Aaron Lazar last night at Rockwell. And we were roommates at Pittsburgh Suffolk Light Opera.
Wow.
God, that guy can sing.
Yes, he can. Yeah, I wish I could see that.
Voice.
Don't you think it's kind of, it's funny because we're about the same age. We got started at the same time in the same kind of like pockets of people in New York and out here in LA. I feel like right now, and maybe it's just because I'm in Hamilton with all these young children. I feel like it's the first time though that I can like look back at all the things that I've gotten to be a part of and the groups of people that I've gotten to be with and just have this real gratitude and excitement about knowing how much more there is to do and to grow. But like, I think also like having this podcast and talking to people and like sitting down, it gives me this perspective. Like, I can't believe that when I was in Spelling Bee with you, that it was already like 10, 11, how many years ago now? It was 2006.
Yeah, it's 11 insane. Years ago.
11 years ago. It doesn't feel like 11 years ago. But on the other side of that, we've gotten to do so many great things in period of time. And I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying. It's just, I guess I haven't gotten to talk to too many people from that period of time other than like our buddy Josh Gad. Does it like freak you out, or does it like give you joy? Like, what does it do to you when you think about that?
I think it's a little different.
Yeah.
I wonder if we're going through different things slightly, yeah. Because I feel like, as you were saying that, I was thinking of all the things that you've done. So Book of Mormon, you have a Tony nomination. I just saw Little Miss Sunshine on the plane, and I was thinking about you. I didn't get to see that production at Second Stage, was it?
Yeah.
But I was like, oh my God, I forgot there was a musical version of this, and Rory played the Steve Carell role, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just thinking about, I mean, those are only the things that I kind of know, and Hamilton, and I'm sure I'm missing a zillion things, but you got married, you know, all of these things, and like life has kind of gone by. And like, for me, yes, I have had relationships and I've done Buyer and Seller and I did Music Man and I did a cabaret show and my mom died and like crazy things, life happened.
Yeah.
But as for work, kind of, I had this like really long, steady thing,
right?
Which is NCIS LA, which as an actor who's used to going from show to show to show, to roll, 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 different authors, different teams, different rooms, different friends, just gathering all those people around you.
Yeah. And having that community and
and New York.
You've been away from it.
I've been away from that. And as much as like we are a family at NCSLA, it's not the same kind bond you form in these rooms. And, you know, I like to say like in each show, you kind of have like one or two people where you're like, you're going to be my actual friend outside of the show.
Right.
And you kind of gather these lovely people from all these, but I haven't been doing that. It's like, it's hard to find a community out here.
Yeah.
You know, everyone on the show is married or, you know, paired off, and, you know, they go to home to their households and their kids. And, and I had that for a while, but, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I'm single. No. But, you know, so it's a little bit,
but you're single, like you have, you're single, but you seems to me like maybe you're making that choice to be single. I mean,
sure.
I'm just saying like, sometimes people are like, oh, I'm single. Well, fair. If you really wanted to have a relationship right now, you could have one, but maybe you're wiser than that. And you're just like, I'm waiting for something that's a lot more meaningful or.
Sure. I mean, I guess I could.
So you're no, just like no standards about
like,
it.
Like someone who lives in a gutter somewhere. I don't know. Right. Like, but.
Have you checked the gutters?
I don't know. They're
pretty handsome in LA.
Dudes out there. Hey. So. I don't know. I just, yeah, sure. I mean, but it's been harder than I thought.
Yeah.
Lately, like since my last relationship, we're getting some personal stuff, but like I haven't, when I moved to LA, I kind of had like these, serial monogamist. I was kind of going from relationship, like a 6 month relationship to a 2 year relationship to a 3.5 year relationship where we like bought a house together. And there was like 6 months in between each one. And I was like going from one to one to one. And then again, like, I think I gave myself a break because like at the end of my last one, then my mom was ill and I was going back and forth and I wasn't in one city really. And I was very much like spread out and floaty and unmoored. And now that I'm kind of back and in LA, I'm like, okay, all right.
Yeah.
Already.
Right.
And I think I'm putting that out there.
Well, you have on this podcast.
Let's go. This is an ad. This is the only real reason why I did this.
Okay, good.
I don't really like you.
I'll send all the submissions directly to you. I know. You're just using me for...
I'm just using it for like a dating service.
It's a lot of people do that.
It's less expensive than paying for OkCupid.
That's true.
Yeah, it's expensive every month. I think it's
true.
It's $5 for the premium.
Oh, my gosh.
You don't know. You don't know about the app world.
I don't. I don't know about the app world. Jill and I have been together for 10 years in April.
God bless.
So wow, it's like, congrats. Yeah, it's crazy.
I have not. I did not know about the app world until recently, until maybe a year or two ago.
It's a big thing.
We could get into a whole thing about that, but maybe that's not what this podcast is about. But I do think that though I recently have quit a lot of those apps, and it is fascinating how much space has been created.
Good.
By not having some of that in my life.
Yeah.
It's an addiction. It's a process addiction.
Yeah.
It's like Facebook or
any social media.
I'm really talking about any app. There are scientists that designed that to get you to keep checking back, to keep looking for a notification to pop up and whether you're into home blogs or, sex or Candy Crush, or you can find it and it will keep sucking you back in.
Yeah. I don't do anything on Instagram or Twitter for a couple weeks. And it's nice.
Really?
Yeah.
It makes me feel better.
Oh, yeah.
I just beat myself. This is welcome to my head. I just beat myself a lot. Clearly. Yeah. I mean, you're hearing that.
Yeah.
Because I think that I feel like I'm being stagnant. I feel like I'm doing this one thing and I'm not I'm not in like the cool circles anymore. And it's just, I used to, a lot less people knew who I was, but they were all people I respected and my friends and people in New York and Broadway and the circles that I loved and respected.
Right.
And now I'm like, okay, well, I'll go to a Midwestern airport and be stopped a bunch of times. Because that's more my demographic and in airport people are standing in lines and like, it's easier to just say hi. And I love it, but it's like, oh, well, who are you? Like, who are these people?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't. And then I'm surprised. Hillary Clinton in her book, said that after the election, she and Bill binge watched, Blue Bloods, Madam Secretary, and NCIS Los Angeles, which, quote unquote, Bill insists is the best of the franchise.
There you go.
I'm like, Hills.
What else do you need?
Hill and Bill? They watch me to unwind?
That's called living the dream, Barrett.
Oh, my God. So I'll take that. Should we end on that?
Yeah, we're going to end on that.
That's a good ending.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much.
It was just nice to get to sit down.
We'll do part two tomorrow.
It's coming. Great. Yeah. See you tomorrow.
Audition, side job, swimming upstream. Believe it or not, you're living the dream.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.